Hey everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm James, that's Katie, and of course that makes this the first ever episode number 9 of Cloud Control, the gaming podcast that's not just good, it's good enough. How are you, Kate? Welcome back for another great episode of the show.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Just the two of us this time. We had a really fun Pokemon guest on last episode. But we've got a some cool things happening. There's been a fuck ton of trailers recently.
I know, and I feel like there's like they're all across the board too. It's like there's some games, there's like Callisto stuff coming out, and then it's like, wow, the Last of Us HBO trailer, which we're watching today on the show. And then it's like, wow, the Game Awards are coming up. We're probably going to get like a ton more trailers. It's going to be like a lot of good stuff to watch.
There was the new Mario trailer for the new Mario movie that actually looks incredible, which
it does.
I think we talked about the first one that came out on here, but there's a second one, which I think is an even better trailer.
Than let's do it. Let's call it audible. Let's watch back-to-back trailers on this episode. Let's do Last of Us, then Mario. Why not?
Okay. Deal. I'm in.
Okay, cool. So that brings us into the topic of the show, everybody, which of course we're now watching two trailers. We're going to react to them right now. We've not seen them before. So it's going to be The Last of Us HBO. The new trailer came out a couple days ago, followed by the Mario movie second trailer. I'm excited now. This is going to be great. And then we both brought another topic to talk about later as well. Kate watched another movie and I did bring a game. You know, I figured we should balance it out as for at least one of us to bring a game.
We're legally obligated to at least bring one. So
that's
you've
right.
got us covered.
That's right, exactly. And so without further ado, I guess we'll just get right into the show and start off with this excellent trailer, which I don't know about you. Like, we've talked about this on the show before, but I am just so excited to see what this Last of Us show is when it comes out. I'm so ready for it.
Me too. And neither of us have watched this trailer. We've saved it for today.
No,
so
I saved it.
A genuine first impression.
Well, it popped into my mind this morning and I was like, wait a minute, now we need something to talk about on the show today, so why not line it up? Okay, so are you ready to watch it, everyone? Obviously this is better as video content, you can watch along with us, but if not, here's some sound effects and our gasps and audible gasps of excitement. So 3, 2, 1, here we go. Now,
if you don't think there's hope for the world,
he looks good.
Man, this setting looks incredible. It's just like the games with the overgrown.
So you don't know.
Like vines and forestry and stuff.
I'm not family.
No. Your cargo.
So heartless.
That is scathing. That will change.
Somewhere out west, they're working on a cure. I think what really impressed him was the fact that I didn't turn into a monster.
If she so much as twitches.
I'm not sure.
Don't.
But the settings look amazing.
Okay.
They do. They look just like the game's locations do, like the overgrown roots and like the vehicles with all the like just bush on top.
If I'm taking you with
me. Yeah, like these outdoor shots specifically are incredible.
The grimy, like get any advice nature of it, you
best
know?
Way west. Yeah, go east.
You got snow too for the end of the game.
You come this far, then you know what's out there.
You're not gonna scare us.
Scared him?
Interesting. That's different than the game, right? Like,
you have a greater purpose than any of us could have ever imagined.
Careful who you
that was the DLC
in.
That will watch.
Yeah.
Oh, and those are the brothers that you meet briefly.
Right,
oh god,
right.
I don't want to go through that again.
Yeah, I know. Oh my god, that's like the worst part of the game.
You trust me.
Oh, and that guy in the game.
Yeah, I can't remember his name now. But like in the diner or whatever with the fire.
Yeah.
Oh wow, that actually looked good too. Jesus.
Yeah, holy shit.
Okay, what do we think of the trailer? What do we think?
I was excited before. I could not be more excited now. Like, this looks incredible. Like, the production quality is insane. It looks just like the game. Like, those outdoor shots and what is it, Boston, I think they start out in.
Yeah.
And they're walking around, like, that first shot of, like, Tess, Joel, and Ellie walking is, like, that is exactly how I remember the game looking.
I totally agree. And, like, I'm there, it's so accurate to the game that I really just hope that Pedro Pascal, Bella Ramsey, they have their knees are intact after shooting. They're going to be squatting for so long, gathering supplies from cupboards. Like, they're going to need some knee pads or something built right. into their costumes.
That's right. All I'm going to say. I hope carry enough scissors around, like at least 13 pairs of scissors.
And just imagine Pedro on set, he's like, oh my god, if I have to swim and push another fucking wood pallet around, like,
you know what's funny is they had that one scene where Ellie was walking across that little like bridge between the buildings. I was like, that's exactly the kind of like dumb like wooden like lift you'd put down in the game to walk across.
100%.
It's so accurate. 100%. But you know what, it looks good. I think it's cool they're bringing so many like smaller characters back from the games, like those brothers.
Yeah, Michael, right? Is it? No, it's not Michael. Forget.
I'm blanking on the name too.
Henry.
But
it's Henry. Henry.
Henry. Yeah.
I forget his dad's name. Yeah,
you have a sequence where you sort of travel with the two of them, and they have that whole thing with you can give the son a toy if you want because.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not allowed to have them because that's a luxury. And God, it was just such a good sequence. And I think, too, there was that one little flash where it looked like it was how the game starts out with Sarah.
Yes.
It was Joel and her younger girls.
I'm so excited to see how that the show handles that, I think, more than anything else. And at least what I would assume is just the first of many, maybe a few seasons. But the way that they handle like Joel's past and what happens with Sarah, I'm just like fascinated to see, because it was already so cinematic and impactful in the game. Like, how will they replicate that in a way where, you know, it's like different, but you know, translated to TV. I don't know what they're going to do, but I'm sure it's going to be like a start with a bang. You know, I can't imagine anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just such a gut punch. And it's also just so integral to like Joel's character. Like, no, your cargo, that is so such a harsh thing to say to somebody. But obviously over time, like they'll have the same kind of arc that they have in the game where they do become family. But like, oh, man, I'm going to cry. Watching this show, I can just tell already.
Yeah, it seems like it's going to be really focused on the characters, as it should be, right? And like just the way they look too. I think like we're talking about the environments, but even like their costumes. Like I'm just scrolling through and seeing that section where Joel wanders onto Bill's property, and he has kind of like that older, more gruff beard, and he just looks like so like you would believe he's part of that type of environment. Like he's actually been living in these slums, avoiding zombies and all these clickers for days. Like it really is believable in a way where we were talking about Yellow Jackets in the car the other day. And some of the, like, for as good as that show is, we're like, oh, you know, their costumes, like it's not so believable. Like they still kind of look like they're all kind of clean and like put together. Mm-hmm. Whereas he looks like, no, he actually just has been in this environment. So I think it's got that extra level of like authenticity in the design of the show overall as well, which is just like proof. I think that they're really trying their best to be as authentic as they can. What the game is.
I totally agree. And I think Pedro Pascal looks like he's doing an absolute killer job in this trailer. Like I can't imagine Joel is a very easy role to step into, especially with a game and him being such a familiar character to so many people. But I think he looks the part. I think he's got that kind of like distant, gruff, like just cold, not cruel, but just distant kind of demeanor down from this trailer. And so I'm interested to see like what him opening up looks like. And then Bella is kind of a tough one because Ellie's such a, like, she looks so much like that other actress that it's kind of weird seeing her look like someone else.
Yeah, like Ellen Page, right?
Ellen Page, yeah, she looks so much like her. So it's kind of weird to see her look like someone else as opposed to Joel and Pedro, who's like, Joel kind of just looks like a video game character, not like another person I'm kind of familiar with. But
yeah,
she seems like she's doing a great job too. I think she's a great casting. Like, I know she was super popular in Game of Thrones and like has been in a few other things with a lot of success. So
yeah, it should be exciting to see her on the screen. And just to clarify something, it's Elliot Page, my mistake. Of course,
yes,
don't want to make a mistake on that. That was something we should correct. So Okay, so that was the first trailer, I guess. Man, I just think I don't want to see any more now. I don't want to see any more surprises. Yeah. They teased the one little monster.
I agree.
I actually think if they release another trailer, I don't think I'm going to watch it now. I want more surprises than anything. And so I think that's my opinion. I don't know about you. Would you watch another trailer?
It'd be tough. I'm kind of on the same page where I hope they don't, because I don't want to be tempted, and I'm perfectly satisfied with what we have. And especially too, if there's even just small things from the game, like, you know, like one of my biggest things now is like, oh, will there be the giraffe scene? Because that was one of the most like impactful small scenes from the game, but I don't want to know or see the giraffe scene ahead of time. I just want to wait for it. So
yeah, that's what I'm not too.
I'm kind of good.
And I'm excited to see too, if they include little things like Ellie being interested in comics, for example, like the way she was so interested in the game to read them for as like a relic from the world before the pandemic. And like how her connection, and she learned things about the world through that. Like, will that still be the way that she learns that information, or how else will it look?
I hope so, because I think that was a really interesting detail, is like the juxtaposition of Joel being someone who knew life before the infection. And so he's jaded because he knows what he had to give up, and he just wants life to go back to what it was. Whereas Ellie doesn't really know any different. So she's still kind of got like she's got more of like an optimism about the world, because for her it's more normal. And so those two like clashing on that like life experience kind of way is a neat part of their relationship. I hope so. The comics were cute, and like, you know, there's scenes of her trying to read them to him in the car, and it's just like a nice humanizing element.
Yeah, exactly. I'm also as a side note too, I'm interested to see a relationship like this coming right off of God of War, because they're very symmetrical in the way of like parent younger child learning to live in a very difficult and tumultuous time frame in their life, and like, you know, the possibility of death and all this stuff, and relationship bonding and whatnot. So it's going to be fascinating to watch that contrast as well. Let's watch Mario. Speaking of contrast, it's The Last of Us.
Just one last thing I want to shout out before we start Mario. I just got to say, and we mentioned it before, but just to really hammer home, like, goddamn, the clickers look good.
Yes, they do.
Like, holy shit. Please don't show us anymore, because they're supposed to be really scary. But oh my god, do they look good.
I don't expect the show to be overly scary. I expect it to kind of be like Walking Dead sort of tones, but I bet you here and there throughout the episodes there's going to be a few little nasty jumps, I would imagine.
I mean, the game had some too. Like, it was tense sometimes.
100%. Okay. Nintendo time. Here we go on three. Do you have a trailer open, Kate, to watch there? Okay. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. They always do that with like the theme songs of these movies, like three little notes really slowly with a piano type of music. Then it all builds up.
Mm-hmm. This is already a very different vibe than The Last of Us. I love the classic stage.
Oh my god, okay.
Not sure if you know who I am, but I'm about to rule the world.
I love Bowser. Wow, this is going to be the best.
Yay.
But there's one problem. There's a human.
Yeah, I like how he's not like overly like goofy.
You.
Do you think I know every human being with a mustache wearing an identical outfit with a hat with the letter of his first name on it? Because I don't.
Bowser is coming.
You and I were talking about this before. I like how it's so interesting, and like, I think it's such a nice change up that Luigi is the one in trouble, and like Peach is part of the rescue team this time around.
No problem.
Yeah, I agree. He gets to be a character a little bit more.
Come on, Mario! Our big adventure begins now!
Get it off, get it off, get it off!
It just seems like they're incorporating so many things from the games into this one jam-packed,
a lot of galaxies.
One and a half hour, 2 hour.
They're all right, like that was a Mario Galaxy reference. Like, there's just so much.
No pressure. And like all the pickups, like they even have like the Tanuki suit and all this Mario Kart.
Mm-hmm. Mario Kart's in here. They have the cheap bridge, which is like a classic stage.
Got a little drift there. Oh my god,
Right? The Wahoo at the end is so cute. I just want to give him a hug. And even the start of it, like that fight where he's at Donkey Kong, like when he goes for that like jump attack, like I'm pretty sure that's just his like forward air and smash.
Yeah, okay. So do you think there'll be like, that's obviously a Smash Bros. Reference, right? They're lined up on a 2D platform, like jumping and doing those moves. Like, is that just going to be an Easter egg? Is there going to be anything else in the like reference to Smash whatsoever? What do you think?
I don't think so. I think anytime there's like a fight, there might be like a Smash reference just of like a move Mario pulls. But I imagine Smash is probably on the lower tier of where we're going to get more of the references from. Mm-hmm, but like, yeah, there's Mario Kart. They reference Mario Galaxy. Like Peach's Castle is so like Odyssey and 64. Like
it's just iconic, right? It's iconic. It's in everything, I think, or most of them.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it looks really good. They showed us a lot of Yoshis, but not our green Yoshi. So I wonder where he will show up because he's obviously going to.
Right, yeah. I'm just looking through like to it, about 1:09, 1:10. It's like this layout just looks so impressive. And like they put together a Mario level on like the side view. And if you pause it, it's like they're, you know, they're creating this. I wonder if there's like someone in there and it's like, oh, this is actually the layout of world, you know, 3, 4 of such and such a game, you know.
Well, it looks like the Mario Maker games, right? Yeah. Like just a floating level like that. But it's really cute if you look kind of like closer up where he's doing it. It's like a fake course that he's just training on. And like I noticed too, like the fire ring that goes around, it's like just a few orange balls. Like it's not actually fire because he's just like training.
Yeah, it's almost like a MXC or like Wipeout or one of those game shows where you have to do an obstacle course.
That's exactly what it's like. And of course, they got the bullet fill and the blocks and just like it reminds me of kind of like the atmosphere of like Wreck-It Ralph kind of thing, but instead of being like a lot of video games, it's just Mario.
I think that's kind of the vibe I'm getting too. And I think, was Wreck-It Ralph also Illumination? I think that might have been I'm not sure on the top of my head if it was or not, but my question for you is, do you think this is going to be better or worse than the Sonic movie? Because the Sonic movie I think was better than expected. Or like Detective Pikachu might be a better example, because I think that movie was good.
I'm so glad that you said Sonic, because I thought you were going to say Last of Us, because we just watched that. And I was like, how could you possibly compare them? That is such an
those are so different vibes, yeah.
Well, it's unfair for me to say on Sonic, because I haven't watched Sonic movie, either of the two of them. I think based on the trailers, this looks better than what I expect of the Sonic movie. Detective Pikachu I really enjoyed, but I also think it had some weak characters and some weak bits of the writing, but it was a really fun world. So I think this has potential to be the best one because the references look solid, the movie is gorgeous, the world is neat. And as long as the writing's pretty entertaining and funny, like, I don't know what else you'd really want from it.
I agree. I'm almost expecting this to be, like, sort of Mr. Bean-style comedy, where, you know, Mario doesn't have a lot of dialogue, but it's kind of more, like, physical humor with some obviously funny writing going on around him, like, the rest of the characters, I think. Like, Charlie Day is Luigi, and, like, I'm sure Bowser's just going to be hilarious somehow as Jack Black and all this stuff, so...
Right, and isn't one of Key and Peele playing Toad?
Yeah, he's one of the Toads, or maybe all of the Toads. I'm not too sure, but
at least that main Toad that's gonna like go around with them.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it should be good. I'm excited to see this. We'll definitely, I think we've said before, but we will talk about this movie on the show, undoubtedly, when it comes out. So I guess Kate, we'll switch topics here to something that you wanted to talk about today, which is a movie. I'll let you take it away.
Yeah, so I'm keeping with the kind of TV movie show trend right now. But this one's also kind of topical because I wanted to recommend, if anyone hasn't seen it, to watch Knives Out. This movie came out in 2019, but the sequel, Glass Onion, just was released.
Right, so you rewatched this in preparation for Glass Onion?
Yes, exactly. So I've yet to watch the sequel, but I recently rewatched Knives Out. And this is a testament to how good of a movie it is, but I think it's better the second time you watch it than the first time, which is extra impressive because it's basically like a whodunit mystery film. And they don't make tons of those anymore, for whatever reason.
Yeah, it's quite rare. Like the genre.
Yeah, I love the genre, but aside from adapting Agatha Christie books, they really just don't make them. So Knives Out is a totally unique one, and it's got like an absolute all-star cast. Like Jamie Lee Curtis is in it, Chris Evans, Ana de Armas. There's just so many. Daniel Craig is the detective who shows up. He's got like Daniel Craig with a southern drawl. He's like, he just says the craziest shit in this movie. He's like, oh, I don't come to like solve anything. He's like, I just merely observe. And
I love his accent in the first movie. I love his accent. It's like almost so corny that it's funny, but somehow he pulls it off and actually makes it like a really interesting trope of his character. Like, how much do I like his character, and how much is it just that I like the way he talks? I don't know.
I think it's both. I think it's like they complement each other. But it's really good. I obviously don't want to spoil it because it's a whodunit, so it really keeps you on your toes, kind of guessing what's going on and how the movie's going to end. But it sort of follows, there's a the father of the family. He's relatively old, he's extremely wealthy, and has a bunch of spoiled, rotten children and their families. And they're all, of course, in one place for a celebration, and no one else really like goes in or out of the house. And he ends up dying in a slightly mysterious way. And of course, it's like, well, all of them have motives. Who could have done it? Who was the murderer? You know, everyone kind of has an alibi, but it's not perfectly airtight. And so it kind of sets itself up like that as a your classic whodunit murder mystery. But then it really subverts itself, I would say, like a quarter of the way into the film. Some really unexpected things happen. And then you're sort of unraveling like a second mystery on top of what you perceive the original mystery was. And then of course there's the big culmination at the end where the movie like spells it out exactly what went down. But the movie is just gorgeous. It has tons of crazy like set pieces, this really elaborate and decadent house. And it's got this one part where they're interviewing people and there's like all these like massive swords behind them and like a bunch of knives. And it's just like, it's got some very interesting visual decisions as well.
Yeah, I even love just looking at this poster, like the all the characters kind of crowded behind the chair where the dad is sitting, and just even all their outfits are so like, I think Clue is such an obvious thing that comes to mind when you look at it, and it's like, okay, well, these are all the characters from Clue. Like there's the guy in the green and like the woman in the pink, like they all have these distinct looks, and it's like they, and then they also have these distinct personalities, where I know like the woman in the pink, I remember she's just like so stern and like with it and put together and like trying to be like domineering over the situation. And you can just like begin to get these caricatures of these people. And throughout this movie, you begin to see where they're all coming from. And you're like, oh, I really like this person. And then they'll like stab someone else in the back and your opinion will just change. And it's just, it keeps you guessing for so long. And I think that's the thing that I like the most about it, is that you really can't figure it out and get bored.
Yeah. But I think to that point though, it is the perfect level of mystery, because obviously when you watch it the first time, you can't put it together. Like, it's too convoluted, it's too complicated, there are too many small details that you just don't realize are important. But, and a testament to how well the movie's written, on the second watch, which is what I have done recently, you can pick up all the little details and all the clues. They are there. So it isn't like a cheap movie where it kind of comes out to surprise you because you couldn't have figured it out. But it's just written with a perfect level of complexity that you wouldn't figure it out on your first watch. But on your second watch, all the pieces are so perfectly put into place that you follow along and you see it in a totally different light than you did the first time, which I think is like a testament to one of these types of stories, which sometimes are better on the first watch and sometimes are good on the second watch. But it's hard to find that balance where like both are so good and they don't like try to compete with each other.
That's a really interesting thing. I'm trying to think, is there another movie that I can bring to mind that has that kind of trait about it. And I don't think on the top of my head I can, but something that I can think of and I think is a similar experience is playing Bioshock and the twist that happens at the end of that game. And then playing through any portion of the earlier game, knowing what happens at the end is like, yeah, you totally see the same thing of like the clues that you could have picked up on, but you just never would have looked out for.
Yeah, absolutely. It is definitely one of those where like you need to watch a second time. Like it's good just to go like watch a couple scenes just to be like, oh, like, and of course it's like, oh, it's so obvious now. How did I not notice? But like,
yeah, you feel like a bit of a buffoon, right?
You do, but you're intentionally being like led to, you know, look at other things and there's information that's meant to distract you. And so, and it's loud and it's bombastic and the characters are so over the top. But what's neat about Knives Out as well, just as a final point, is the one of the main characters is actually just a really simple and nice person. Like all the people in the family tend to have these really outrageous characteristics or really strong traits. But it follows as well, one of the main characters that helps, and she spends a lot of time with Daniel Craig, is she's the nurse.
And she's the one in the blue dress, right?
No, that's the other girl. She's the one on the very end with the big scarf.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And she is not one of the family members, but she is the nurse that takes care of the father. And so has spent a lot of time with him and built up a relationship and was kind of like, he saw his family, but maybe not the rest of the family so much. And her trait is basically she's just a really kind person. And so she's kind of juxtaposed against this outrageous, greedy, horrible family. And she's, you know, kind of, she's gotten mixed up in all of the drama and the politics that are going on. And the movie kind of has a bit of a message too of like her being a good person in comparison. And it kind of, it has a little bit more of a dialogue of what it's trying to say about the morality of truth and various things like that. Like it's not just surprise and shock and trying to guess. But there also is like some deeper meaning written to it as well. So I cannot recommend, I would say this is honestly one of the best movies I've ever watched. I love Knives Out so much. And I hope the sequel is at least half as good. We'll see.
I am totally with you. I wish that I had watched this in theater. I wish I had watched Glass Onion in theater while it was out there. And unfortunately, I didn't make it out in time. And I, you know what? It's just on me. I even knew that it was a time thing and I just didn't make the time. Mm-hmm. And now that we're having this conversation, I regret it.
Yeah, me too. It was 1 week exclusive and I just happened to have like one of the busiest weeks of my life that week.
Yeah.
So what can it you didn't do? End up working.
And, what can you do?
You know, we got snow here too. So that was tricky to navigate. But
exactly. And you know what? Because of the snow, that means I got to stay inside and get addicted to a new video game. Kate, let me tell you. Oh my God. Let me tell you about Vampire Survivor. Now, I just sent you a video because I'm playing a video alongside of our conversation here for anyone watching along. And I started at about a minute 30 seconds just into some gameplay. Because this game is really just visually pleasing is the number one thing that I love about it. It is like visual therapy, everybody. There is basically no story to it. And it is just a roguelite kind of shoot 'em up game. You're dodging, you are getting flooded. Your screen is like 2D, top down, sort of pixel art, like an old classic NES game. And you are just avoiding like swarms and hordes and masses of enemies that are coming at you. And the whole thing is themed very like vampires, ghosts and ghouls sort of thing. I remember actually someone telling me, and I should have verified this, that a lot of the sprites in this are actually like palette swapped and slightly edited Castlevania sprites from like some of the old games.
You know what's funny is I can't confirm or deny that, but just watching this video, that's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, oh, it's so Castlevania. Mm-hmm. But
it's also like the axes and the whips.
The axe and the whip. It's at least Castlevania inspired at minimum.
Yeah, exactly. But it is just such an addicting game. Like you start off and you are just basically placed in one of these levels and you are playing as this guy. There's a lot of different characters and they all have different weapons and kind of specialties. But this guy you start off as is the guy that is in this video right now. And he starts with the whip, which is the first weapon you get to use. And it kind of just whips in front of you. And it doesn't happen when you press a button. The only thing you do to control this game is move your character around. And everything else happens sort of on a cooldown. And then it will activate automatically. So you're sort of running around trying to hit guys with your whip. And then when you kill the guys. Sometimes they drop the blue orbs on the ground, which are your experience. Collect enough and you'll get to level up. So you'll either get to like a random choice of three things, which is picking up a new ability or an item or something, or leveling up something you already have. And so as you go, you're just accumulating like more and more things on the screen. You'll see like this guy now has a whip and he's got some like throwing stars and some axes. And so now there's just bullets kind of coming more and more. And it just builds in such an excellent way. And the pacing is really surprising to me, because at the start of the game, you really kind of feel like, oh man, you know, I don't have enough power to take these hordes down, especially if a couple of the early things you take are like a health boost or like an armor increase or something like that, or like gain some more experience if you don't take the firepower. But then later on, as you kind of get into like, you know, surviving for 15, 20 minutes, or maybe even a little bit less than that, you can just get to such a powerful level where you're becoming like the attacker instead. And your abilities are just so strong and you're just cleaning these guys out. And it is just like, you know, raking a zen sand garden or something like that. Like, it's just the best game in the world.
The zen sand garden of literally murder thousands.
Yeah, literally thousands of them. But then as you go, the interesting part too is you collect money, and then when in between the levels you can do the roguelite thing of like unlocking new characters that all start with different weapons. You can unlock permanent boosts, so instead of having like, you know, 20% health just for the one run where you pick the item up, you can start every run with like a 20% health boost. Or you can start every run with one of the best characters is this guy named Gennaro, and his ability is that he just instantly shoots two of the weapon that he starts with. So instead of throwing one knife, he'll throw two. And you can instantly start with like an extra one of those if you save up enough money and buy that. And that's like a very helpful upgrade. So you kind of play around and find different combinations, a lot like a game, like a very light version of Hades. They don't interact in the same way. But if you do collect like certain combinations, you'll be able to evolve the weapons and they'll get to like a certain higher stage and get even more powerful and whatnot. So there's little things to play around with and do, like, oh, one more run because I want to, you know, collect that combination, or I want to see what that weapon evolves into. And just little nuggets to keep you coming back to. What ends up being like a very deep hole of, it's a great game to listen to podcasts to, you know, so that's been like hours of my life over the past few days.
This looks like the kind of game, and I will say, like, the visual, the art and the assets are good. Like, I don't mean to say anything negative about the art, but just in terms of like being a spectator, it's just not an exciting game to someone play, right? Like, it looks like the kind of thing that you could just like you said, one more run, just kind of like sink time into. And especially as that, like, I'm notorious for, you know, having a really busy day and then having an hour and a half free at the end of my night once I've done, you know, work and, you know, I've tutored my students and I've made dinner and, you know, I've done all the million things I have to do. And then I have an hour and a half left in my night and I go like, man, I really want to play God of War, but I'm just too tired. So then I play a game and like watch YouTube or something like that. And this looks like the exact kind of game that is perfect for that, like, calm down for an hour.
100%. This is exactly what I've been doing. The exact experience you're describing is this. And it's got just that level of like, of secrecy around it too. Like, there's a few levels you go through, and admittedly, like the one you're watching, this is probably like the ugliest level by quite a margin, this sort of brown library setting.
Do you see how many books are in this level? This is wonderful.
You're right. But I mean, there's some outdoor stages that look a little better and like some dreamlike ones that are kind of cool. But what's interesting too is I just played, there's some bonus levels that you unlock, and I got to a certain point in one of those and it sort of changed from a big open area into like a little hallway that I was walking down with a bunch of obstacles and weird stuff. And it's just a little like tidbit. And I'm thinking like, oh, if I do one more run on that stage, like what if I find a new character at the end of that or something, you know, to see what I unlock, or a new weapon. So it's just really enticing. Is the best way to describe it, I think. And I couldn't recommend it more highly, especially since it's on Game Pass, everyone. It's like the classic Game Pass game of like, you probably wouldn't want to spend $20 on it, but for whatever this is right now, like, it's amazing and you have to install it. You have no choice.
That's right. Once you finally kicked your Slay the Spire addiction and you need a like nighttime relax game and you've got Game Pass, this could be a week. This could easily fill
definitely
a week.
Oh yeah, it would consume my life if I let it, but, you know, God of War is just that good. I have to reserve at least a little bit of time still to talk about that. But yeah, this game is great, and everyone play it. Oh, one last thing about it I got to mention too. It's not just like a high score timer, like trying to get as far as you can, like up, and you see it's counting up for like, oh, we survived for 7.5 minutes, 8 minutes. It maxes at 30 minutes. You actually can beat the levels. They're not just like an endless leaderboard thing. And so to me, that's way more enticing as well, because I can actually like complete the levels and I don't move to the next one until I've done the 30 minute survival and actually like unlock stuff.
I have a question. Does 30 minutes seem like a 30 minutes seems like a long time? Do you think that is the right length?
It flies by because there's sections, okay, like I said, like I feel like the first third you're really trying to survive, like you're building up your weapons. Mm-hmm. Then the middle one, you're really like you're feeling juiced up, like you are strong and you are basically trying to get to as high of a level as you can. So that in the last third, the last like 5 minutes, especially when you get kind of the onslaught of like, you know, Medusas start coming at you and like these centaur things, mm-hmm, and it's like pretty crazy. And so you really have to make sure you're prepared for that sort of final wave, as it were. And so it's a nice rhythm to the game. And I don't feel like it really drags on. I do feel like sometimes it gets a little bit repetitive, I guess, but that's because I've played for like such long sessions, because I'm like, oh, there's still 30 minutes left on this podcast, I guess I'll start another run, when I really probably should have like done something else. But yeah, that's on me.
That's fair. I think that might be the one thing that puts me off, is I assume they were pretty quick, but 30 minutes seems
well,
like
they will be quick though. They will be quick at the start, yeah, because you're gonna not be strong enough. Like on your first run, that's you could
true,
never make it that far until you level up your
that's
character.
True. I just foresee getting 20 minutes in and then dying and being like devastated. But at the same time, playing a game like this for 30 minutes seems like a long time when you look at it in isolation. But doing 15 runs of it for 2 minutes seems like,
yeah, reasonable.
So easy to do. And really, what's the difference?
That's a good point. And you know, I haven't even really thought of this, because on the Series X, I have the quick resume. So I've just been like, when I collect a chest and the game pauses, I've just suspended it if I need to go do something else. Like, it's not like I'm beholden to completing the run if I don't have to, right? So it's a little different. But yeah, Vampire Survivors, everybody. Great game. Everyone go play it. And for now, we'll move on to the last part of our show, which is, of course, listener mail, because at the end of every show, we love to answer a listener mail question or comment from someone in our audience. Because why not? Some of the best topics we get to talk about come out of the questions that you guys write in. So, of course, we'd love it if you do so. And that email address is cloudcontrolpod@proton.me. And you can also get in contact with us on Twitter, for the time being, at least at cloudcontrolpod. All the links are down below, and wherever you're listening to us, we thank you very much. And without further ado, Kate will have the question for today's topic.
Goofy, kind of a little fun. But this one is from Jonah, and he asks, what is the craziest genuine pro gamer move you've ever seen? And let me tell you, we've pulled off a few pro gamer moves in our time, absolutely.
It's true.
But we've also seen some cool ones, whether online or, you know, just, you know, when you're queued up in a game and someone really pops off. So I think before we get started on other ones, we just have to shout out that the first time I played Fortnite was with James. We were playing co-op and we won 3 matches in a row, duoed up. So that was pretty good. My Fortnite career has kicked off.
It was pretty massively good. And the best part is it was during the Dragon Ball Z season as well. And so I think in either the second or the third match we played, we were like, okay, there's me and you versus this one guy. Like, we both happen to have a Hadouken. So we jump in the air and like double Hadouken this guy to death. And it's just like perfectly lined up, like crossed beams into his body. Like the coolest thing. It's like from the anime. That was probably my favorite pro gamer moment of all time, I would probably say.
just because of how cool that was actually, but what you have prepared?
No, but it's up there.
I just had to shout it out.
No, it's good. I mean, my actual one, I don't even think I have something of my own. Like, I don't really think I've ever had, you know, I get some cool headshots sometimes when I'm playing a game, or like, you know, I feel like I'm pretty good when I play Fortnite, or like we've had some back-to-back wins with the guys I play with and whatnot, but I don't think I've ever been like, you know, holy shit, put the team on my back type of thing. But what I wanted to shout out as a pro gamer moment is like the thing that sticks out to me the most is I love watching like speedruns sometimes. And so I just wanted to highlight one of like my favorite one of those that impressed me the most and sort of got me into watching it. And the reason I thought of it was because it's The Last of Us. Obviously, we talked about that earlier in the show, but I was just enamored watching Games Done Quick one time. And I know it's like kind of off. It's not exactly like a pro gamer moment, like in terms of like a competitive game, but just the skill with which to pull off this speed run and like execute these exactly timing, like headshots and like moving around at the right time. I'll find the link to it and put it in the show notes. But the Last of Us speed run is like glitchless. It's one of the coolest things I've ever seen someone just pull this off so mechanically, to the point where it just looks like the whole game is a scripted cutscene and like there's no flaws with the way they just run through it and make it look so easy, when I know like some of those parts can be so challenging or tedious to get through without being seen and et cetera, et cetera. So just very, very cool. And I would love to shout that out as something we don't talk about very often, which is like the speedrun community. So there you go. That's mine. But I'd love to hear yours, because I feel like you play, you'd have some interesting stories from a game you played online or something.
I mean, yeah, we get those from time to time. Like, you know, we play HOTS, which has some moments, but it's not super crazy. I mean, there's times where you win a game and you're like, you know, your team got like 24 kills, the enemy got zero. And sometimes it's the other way around, where you just get absolutely dumpstered.
Hey, my pro gamer moment the other day was actually putting a Koye on the location that copies all your cards in Marvel Snap. So it like powered my deck up four times. Yeah. And I just slaughtered the guy on the other two locations. That was really good. I recommend that wholeheartedly.
My promised Marvel Snap move I've ever done was somebody hobgoblined me, mm-hmm. and then I played Odin and the hobgoblin like jumped back to his side. And he did quite a few emotes on that.
Amazing.
One.
Amazing.
So that was pretty good. The first couple of things I thought of was my personal best pro gamer moment was I was recently playing Sekiro for the second time because I wanted to platinum it. And since I played the first time, they have a feature now where it's like just you can just refight bosses whenever mm-hmm. you want. Mm-hmm. And so I'm about halfway through the game and I figured, I was like, you know what? I'm going to fight the final boss right now just for fun. Like, it's New Game Plus, so I technically have it unlocked. I was like, I'm just going to fight, like, you know, good old Gloxane Ishin and see how that goes. And I took him down on my first try and felt like an absolute badass. Mm-hmm. And then I thought about what I was actually going to say is the proest of gamers. And I remembered that there is a Twitch streamer, goes by the name of Dino. And mm-hmm. he has now beaten, including Elden Ring, every single FromSoft game hitless. Without taking any damage at all.
Of course he has. Of course he's
yes,
done that.
Yes, not 100%ing the games, but like doing all the mandatory bosses to
now,
get
just to
credit.
Be clear, when you say FromSoft, you mean like Souls Forward, or are you talking like the retro FromSoft stuff?
Souls
okay,
Forward.
Okay.
Demon Souls through Bloodborne.
That's still ridiculous, obviously.
That is outrageous. So that's crazy. And I'd shout that out as probably the coolest thing that I know in terms of like skill. But the last thing I wanted to eventually build up to was the ultimate in FromSoft. And I saw this today. So I just happened to be watching it at work. And it was so funny and perfect for this question. So there is a YouTuber. His name is Zero Lenny. And he's a really fun guy. And he has a couple videos where he's found like old IGN guides from when the games came out, like before people had like YouTube mm-hmm. guides and tutorials and things. And so it's like the OG, like IGN, like came out a week after the game, like someone at IGN rushed to beat it, and the guides are so incredibly like scuffed, like some of the stuff is completely untrue and some is like just bad tactics. Like,
wow.
one of the ones, the Bloodborne one, has a part in the DLC where the guy is like, I actually don't know where to go, I'm kind of lost, so just figure it out. Like, that's in the guide. So that's kind of the quality we're working with. And so he played the Demon's Souls like remake following the like OG from like PS3 Demon's Souls. And the final boss of that game is considered by far the hardest boss in Demon's Souls. Mm-hmm. His name is Old King Alant. He's an absolute badass. He has a move that if he hits you with, he actually reduces your level.
Wow, that's sinister.
A total badass. You can get it back, but like it will de-level. He can potentially de-level you in the fight. Like, he's a total badass.
Holy
this guy.
Shit.
But the guide suggested this cheese strategy, and I watched it work. And it's the most stupid gamer move I've ever seen, where there's an item you can wear called the thief ring that makes you harder to detect by enemies. Mm-hmm. So if you put the thief ring on, old King Alant can't, and you just kind of hide beside the door, the boss arena when you first go in, he can't find you. So he walks a little bit towards you, doesn't see you, and then turns around, and then he just stands there. So I watched, based on the IGN guide, which we thought was going to be absolute bullshit because so much of the rest of the guide was. So you wait for him, he turns around, you sneak up with the thief ring, and then there's a spell called Poison Cloud. And what that does is it basically just like puts some poison out around you, and it does like 10 damage a second or something like that. And that doesn't like trigger him to get like into a combat state. So he just stands there. And so he has got like 5,400 health.
Oh my God.
And he do 10 damage a second. But if you just stand there with your thief ring and keep using this like poison cloud spell, you can kill him, the final boss of the game, and he does nothing.
That's so cheesy. That's so bad.
So cheesy. It's so bad. And it still works in the remaster all these years later.
You think they'd fix something like that? I guess it's intentional, but it's like, that's so funny.
I think he's even got like a poison, like he's like not fully immune to it, but he's like good against it. So like, yeah, I so think it doesn't even do the whole 10. Like it does even less. Holy shit. You stand there for like 20 minutes. But I watched that today. I was like, this is one of the dumbest, but like, what a pro gamer move to beat the boss that way.
An absolute pro. Well, there you go, Jonah. Thank you very much for your listener mail question. And as we said at the top of the segment, if you would like to be cool like Jonah and write us in a question for our show next time, you can do so to cloudcontrolpod@proton.me. And speaking of next episode, we have a very exciting show planned for next week's episode, which is, of course, recapping the Game Awards. We'll be going over all the winners and losers of the awards themselves, talking about all the surprises and trailers we might see during the show as well. So get looking forward to that, everybody. I know we are. And we'll be going over our predictions as well to see who is the victor on our little competition. So until next week, we'll see you then. And this has been Cloud Control, the gaming podcast. It's not just good, it's good enough.